Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Folks, if you'd like a copy of my best-selling first book, Tales of a First Round Nothing, head on over to ecwpress.com. If you'd like a copy of my second book, Tales with TR, Fights, Film, and Folklore, head on over to www.flankerpress.com. If you'd like either copy personalized, just add a note. Thanks for listening to my podcast, and happy reading.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome. Tales with TR, episode 188B. I'm your host, Terry Ryan Jr. And I am exhausted. In a good way, though. Lots of great messages, lots of fun requests. I've done some podcasts that I listened to that I never thought I'd be a guest on. Thank you for that. Just got off with Riley Cote. And Derek Nasty, yeah, it's Settlemyer. I always thought it was Stottlemyer. I heard of Derek Nasty Settlemyer. He's used to be an equipment guy with the Philly Phantoms and the Flyers. And him and Riley have a podcast called the Nasty Knuckles Podcast. But so I'm just realizing now that it's Settlemyer, not Stottlemyer. I thought that for the better part of two decades. Anyway, it was a lot of fun to go on there, and Jeremy Roenick's pod. That was awesome. What is it again? Oh, Snipes and Stars. Snipes and Stars. Is it? Oh, Stars and Snipes. Yes. And Tim Peel. That was awesome. I don't want to go down the list of every single one I've been on, but they were a lot of fun. And some people I look up to. So it was great to share hockey stories with some people who are great storytellers. Boy, man. Say what you want about Pierre McGuire. I've always gotten along with him, but he's got a lot of great stories, man. I went on his pod, and him and Jimmy Murphy, an old acquaintance, and on the Sick Podcast, and it was deadly. Like, Pierre has so many stories. Like, you know, I guess it's the way the generations go. After the game, I was telling the Growlers some stories, and they were throwing some back, and we had a great exchange well into the night. And but one thing is I noticed is, like, you know, it's similar, that the eras might change and the culture might change a little bit, might get tweaked. The music in the room might, you know, tweak a little bit over years. There might be equipment might change, the rules. You know, there are things that definitely change. I mean, Everything changes though, right? Nothing stays the same. People that say, I want it like it was old school. Okay, when? In the 20s, when you couldn't pass the puck forward? In the 30s, where a penalty shot was a slap shot from the slot? Right? The 50s or 60s, where they wore no helmet? There was only six teams? Right? So there's always been reason for someone who was, you know, getting older. I don't just mean my age. It could be 80. You could be my age. You could be 20, talking about, you know, the era when you were 5 to 10 years old. You still, so you can always look back in the past and romanticize the era that you came through or you played or you preferred because you experienced it, which, you know, sometimes it has some truth to it, sometimes it doesn't. But when you tell stories in a hockey dressing room, like, it doesn't matter if it's my dad, me, or one of those growlers, or someone that's going in junior right now, a lot of it is relative. They understand because time has gone by, but the game, the essence of it, stays the same. So I enjoy, you know, passing off some stories with a lot of these hosts, players. And you don't just have to be a player. Lots of my good friends in the media world are, you know, they study the game. They might have a stick in their hands, but they're very knowledgeable. And that's why I've always hated the argument, Nick, you get, I might be somewhere with somebody at a bar and we're at happy hour and we might be discussing a topic. And someone might say, well, Terry, you're right because you played. But not necessarily, though. What if I was there with two or three other hockey players, we wouldn't agree on everything. So that argument automatically doesn't really float, right? Because if us as hockey players don't agree on everything, then that shouldn't be the standard to win an argument. Because you see what I'm saying? Because if one of us is wrong now or of a different opinion, then we could also be when we're talking with someone that never put on a skate in their life. Hell, I often am. I'm not in the business of predicting, but on Jason Greger's show on Monday and Thursdays, Sports 1440 Edmonton, which I co-host, you know, I often got to predict what's going to happen and give my opinion on the game. Now, I think my opinion on the game, it does carry weight that I played, right? And I can tell you from personal experience certain things, but it comes like opinion on who's going to win or a particular rule or, you know, a player's habits or whatever. I might be able to give some real important information. I might be able to bring that to the table. And sometimes it'll probably be, oh, I see. Like if it's black and white, like, I don't know why I had to use wrist guards the other night. I remember I never had to use those, but the league provides them now. The growlers, when I went in, I had to have these wrist guards that make sense, but I never wear them. And back in the day, I remember getting slashed there a lot, so I used to tape up around my wrists. Now they have those guards, so it's black and white. Why do they have them? Well, they have them because there's injuries and it protects you a little bit, especially with a skate, right? Get your jugular vein there, right? I can totally see it. That's a black and white answer. Why the Maple Leafs haven't been successful into the third round of the playoffs? That's opinion. And I'd like to add to the conversation and be part of it, but I never think that I'm automatically going to win it, or winning a conversation doesn't really happen. I never think I'm going to like win a debate and throw the mic down because of an opinion I have on hockey. I like it. It's inclusive and anybody can have an opinion. And anyway, that's why I enjoy doing these media hits. And talking to people, like I will at the NHL All-Star game. Boom! I love that door opening. Not that I'm an NHL All-Star, but I'm going to do some events with the alumni. I'm going to bring my dad up. So if you're a fan of this program or Shorzy or whatever, or the Canadians, or you just want to have a chat, that's when to do it, folks. We'll be in and around all the festivities at NHL All-Star Weekend. February, we'll be there the 1st to the 4th. The game's on the 3rd. So I'm looking forward to that. Now I'm going to have Riley Cote on here today, guys, and I'm going to, because it's the end of a week that's been great for many reasons that you probably could guess. It's also been a real tiring, taxing week. I officially, at the end of tonight, I will have gotten back to every message. And that was like, I didn't really count. Like I said last time, there was 431 texts. Those are people that had my number. And I couldn't see the bottom of Facebook or Instagram. So I'm thinking at least 1,000 something. And I'm almost at the end. And I know a lot of them are you guys who I'm speaking to right now, right? So if it took me a while to get back to you, or I merely just liked something, if you put your heart into a message and I just went like, just know that I saw it. And for the time being, please don't get back to me. Please, please don't. Because one thing that was happening is like I was getting back to people. Hey, man, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. But then they get back to me and say, no, seriously, man. And I get it, because normally that would be an easy thing, just having a conversation. But when I'm trying to get the messages over with and people keep getting back to me, I was like going to bed with more messages than I woke up with. Anyway, certainly not a bad problem to have. Just for right now, don't message me. And then I'm guessing all this is going to subside. And, you know, if not, well, I'll be done my messages, checking them at least by tomorrow, if not tonight. And I'm thinking anyway. And, you know, then next week, I just want to breathe. I've got a few other media requests. I've spaced them out. Now, this week, I've just been going boom, 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 you know. But I've spaced them out a bit next week. I'm in Banff next Thursday, Friday, Saturday to give a speech. I believe it's at the Banff Springs. Is that one of the hotels there? So stay tuned if you're out that way. But I'm going to take next week and spend a few days with my daughter, with my parents, my friends. And I'm going to do maybe, I think I've already got it worked out, like a brief media thing a day or two. I'm going to do my own podcast and just take some time to breathe again. And then really kind of organize my next few months. I've got some awesome opportunities, and I'm really excited about that. One of them is giving a speech, I think it's in Halifax, with Carey Price. So Carey Price took the exact same route to Montreal that I did. He went Quesnel Millionaires, Tri-City Americans, Montreal Canadiens. There's nobody else that did that. Not one person that did that exact route in a row. Sheldon Surrey played on all three teams, but, you know, there was a big gaps in between. So I guess three of us though have done it, but me and Carey were right in a row, Quesnel, Tri-City, Montreal. Of course, my stay was a little briefer than Carey's, but anyway, I'm sure it'll be a nice conversation. I'm looking forward to that. What else? Okay. People have been asking me about books, and normally I have some here and to sign and send out, but I don't have time to go to the post office and everything. So if you can, just go to flankerpress.com or ecwpress.com. And if you order a book, say you want me to sign it, and they'll send it to me, and I'll sign it, and it'll get out to you. If you merely want to just sign my name, Flanker has a lot on hand, and I think ECW too as well. But if you need me to personalize it, then just add a note. And we'll go from there. Before I move on to Riley, who's coming any second, I just want to once again thank everybody, the Growlers coaching staff and players and everybody that came out and followed along, my relatives, my friends. I'll say it one last time. It was so unique, so fun to have that kind of energy. You can tell now I'm on the other side of it. Yeah. Can't keep myself awake because all that pent-up energy and emotion and positive, even if it's positive, it'll wear you out. But it's my favorite way to be worn out with this kind of news, you know? Anyway, I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but It was one of the best. No, it wasn't. It was the best experience of my life outside of the cliche stuff, like your kid and, you know, moments with your family. I know kind of transcend that, but of all the sports moments, say, or human moments that I remember that didn't have to do with some wedding or funeral or birth, right? That right there was just cat's ass. And I'm going to be announcing where I'm going on the weekends. This weekend, it's Banff, of course, right? Then it's all NHL All-Star Weekend. The weekend after that, I'll be in Orlando. The weekend after that, I'll be in Brockville, February 16th to the 18th. The weekend after that, I'll be in Fort St. John, BC, February 23rd to the 25th. And then I start to lose track. But either the next weekend or the weekend after that, I'll be in Binghamton. Hockey Helps Cancer. And then at some point in March, we're going to go to Chicago as a Shorzy cast. And I, at least a few of us, I believe, I don't really know all the details, but they did reach out and ask me to go down. And I'm led to believe it's not just me. And I think it'll be like maybe dropping a puck or something, but whatever it is, I'm excited. And we're going to have Riley Cote on now in a minute. He's just going to explain a little bit about what he's into. He's into psychedelic therapy with mushrooms, of course. Mostly, I guess. I can't put words in his mouth. But I took his advice. I've had him on my podcast, and it was years ago. It was like 3 years ago. And I was pretty intrigued. And I do microdose mushrooms here and there now on his advice and his stories. And I respect that guy for a lot of reasons. And if he wasn't even connected to that, check him out. You like hockey fights? You like listening to this podcast? You're a fan of blue-collar hockey? Here's a guy who played for the Phantoms, Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Phantoms, Philadelphia Flyers. Western League guy, fucking tough as nails, and also very articulate and open-minded. He's a very interesting guest. I wish I could have him for an hour, but today we're going to ask him a few questions and really get to the essence of what makes Riley Riley and what he's up to now. So, thanks for tuning in. I'm going to go get a water, and I'm going to come right back with Riley Cote.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. With DraftKings, you can bet on any game you want. Whether you want to bet the puck line or the over-under, DraftKings has something for everybody. And if you want, you can throw down on your favorite player as an anytime goal scorer. Or if you're looking for a long-term bet, maybe you want to predict the Stanley Cup champion. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with promo code THPN, as in the Hockey Podcast Network. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
And here we go, folks. We're back with former NHLer, pro athlete, current entrepreneur, philanthropist, podcast host, Riley Cote. How you doing, Riley?
Doing well, man. Appreciate you having me on. Good to see you.
No sweat. So for those that don't know, here's how we're going to start. I've already explained. I've had a long week, but I want you on because I think certain things that you're involved in now are very important. Now, people, I usually do with my guests, as you know, first time they're on, I have I like to go through their careers chronologically. Now, we've already done that. It was actually October 3rd. In 2020, so it was episode 32, I didn't realize, almost 3.5 years ago. Crazy how time flies like that. So if you want to hear that, it's a very interesting story with lots of nice hockey tales, and we touched on some things that we're going to touch on here now, but it was, it's episode 32. So One of the things, I got some questions here for you, some light fodder that some people wanted to know, some listeners of the show, when they found out I was having you on. But the first thing, I don't want to run out of time without talking about the psychedelic therapy that you're involved in. And I know there's a lot of branches of this. And with you, you've experienced it. You've invested part of your life, a big part into it. And you're very passionate about it. People talk about the passion I had for the game of hockey the other day. That was on display. You're a passionate player as well as with your new adventure. Tell us about your involvement in psychedelic therapy.
Yeah, well, it's, where do I begin? Maybe going back to 2010 when I retired from playing hockey.
Yeah.
I was dealing with a host of physical ailments, concussion-related issues, substance abuse issues. And I had a relationship with both cannabis and psilocybin mushrooms specifically, you know, recreational festivals, you know, the party scene, right? But misunderstanding, no real mindfulness in it, no real intention behind it. But when I retired, I made a decision to own my own shit, you know, to dig myself out of the hole that I dug myself into, right? And own it, right? It was just getting punched in the face for a living, but it was also all the extracurricular activities that I was engaged in and being accountable for how it was affecting my mental health and emotional health and spiritual health. So I had read a book called Hemp for Health around cannabis, and it was at the time highlighting the different cannabinoids, the viable industrial hemp plant, building materials, the whole bit. But I started to understand cannabis, surface level science of cannabis and some of these cannabinoids,
okay,
as it pertains to healing the brain, neuroregeneration, just brain health in general, and CBD specifically, and that one. And that led me down to another rabbit hole of reading and understanding psilocybin and its effect on not just brain health and mental health, but more importantly, which I had no relationship with, was my emotional well-being, my emotional intelligence, and really understanding the spiritual nature of this existence. And that opened up this world of healing and understanding and acceptance and compassion for my situation, kind of shedding the old skin. It helped me really let go of who I thought Riley Cote was, you know, the hockey player, the enforcer, right? It was helping me shed that skin and evolve into the true me, I guess you could say, right? The essence of who I really was, which is, you know, you take away my name and my job and all that other stuff. It was, you know, right down to the core, right? And it helped me just kind of reinvent myself, find myself, heal myself. And therefore, it's kind of like the analogy of putting the mask on the plane before you help someone else. So you got to save yourself before you start, you know, doing the work and being of service to the community. So it's been an amazing catalyst. So what I will say it's helped me do is find the yoga mat, find the meditation cushion, because you have people in certain camps saying, well, you don't need psychedelics to help you to get to these places. And I agree with that. You don't. But they're amazing catalysts for people that are really struggling to help make sense of the, you know, the crises they're in and help them self-reflect and therefore be able to find these practices that are within us already. And that's really where the work begins, the practice, right? And it's been an amazing ride, you know. It's ongoing, right? We don't ever come to a space and time where we're saying, oh, I'm done healing and we're good, you know, because there's always adversity. There's always shit to work through. Life is complicated, as you know. But life can be more enjoyable. You know, it could be a lot more gentle. It could be a lot less suffering. You know, it's like, you know, the essence of Buddhism, you know, it's transcending pain and suffering into joy and happiness. And it's actually a thing. You can, believe it or not, do this on this planet. You know, you don't have to wait till we die and go to heaven for this to happen. And I think the psychedelics really brings such a concentrated awareness around just the things that we take for granted, you know, and how hard we make life sometimes. Like, we become our own worst enemy, right? And I think once you get out of the way, it's amazing how life can be so much more enjoyable, right? It's just
manageable. More fulfilling.
More fulfilling. Yeah, exactly. So
that's your words in your mouth, just because here's the thing, man. So when we spoke back then, and I had experimented with microdosing, but not really a lot. And my experience with mushrooms, like the first few times, I didn't do them for like 15 years because I freaked myself out.
Right.
Same thing. I'm at a party and people are going, come on. And I was actually on the St. John's Maple Leafs. I don't want to sell anybody out, but there was a few of us, 99, 2000, that did them. I did them for the first time. And it was in a party atmosphere. And that's the last thing I remember going, I'm never going to touch this again. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times, maybe more, but it really for a long time, I didn't really touch much of it. Now, I was aware what you were doing. I can't believe it's 3.5 years ago now. But since, and I've always, like, there's things, you know, I would read about meditating. I'm not religious, but I get, like, the Buddha, that we're all connected in life and energy. I'm not saying I'm not spiritual. When I say that, people think I'm atheist or something, and that's not the case. I just find it hard to put all my belief in, like, a story like Noah's Ark. Like, I hate to put it all in there when it's a real leap of faith. There's a lot in between. And, you can still be spiritual and believe that there's something higher and there's positive energy that I can't really explain out there, but here's it. So after you, I started once in a while, and now I get them, like I get it. And I take a real microdose once in a while. I take a 250 milligrams, maybe 500, sometimes in the morning though, like with coffee.
Yeah.
People are like, what? I'm like, no. If I got to write or I got to do this, or be creative, and not always only that. Sometimes it's just clarity. Mm-hmm. So I do it often, and you know what ended up being? I couldn't find, and I'm into like the Beatles and George Harrison when he went to see the Maharishi, and they all did. And you told me about ayahuasca and everything, so I was kind of looking for that. You know, I was like getting on the mat, doing the thing, and then I found, you know, I'm not saying it didn't help a little bit, but for me, everybody's different. Okay, mm-hmm. For me, I sit or lay in a so that I won't fall asleep. You know, if you lay on your back, you're going to fall asleep. So I put myself in some situation that's comfortable, but I'm not going to nod off. Mm-hmm. And I take some, and usually, like I said, that much, maybe 3/4 of a gram. And I'll listen to music. It's often the Beatles. Doesn't have to be. Again, I'm connected to that. But it might be, I don't know, it might be just as a soundtrack. It might be waves. It's usually music. It usually takes me back there. Mm-hmm. And at first I'm like, I'm doing this wrong. But then I thought, hold on, if this is what I like, and if this is what puts me in that mood, and that's what's addictive, I don't mean the mushroom part of it. I mean that I was really, if you can't tell, I get nervous energy, right? So I would do that, and I would listen to music of some sort. I love a band, Mazzy Star. They're great for that. And it puts me right there without putting it. And now I'm relaxed, brings me down here. Okay, and if I got to write a chapter or something, I might do 30, 45 minutes of that. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a little bit more clear. It might be anything, but I find it really helps. It's therapeutic in getting my nervous energy harnessed the right way. Mm. So that's number one. So you really did rub off in ways that you wouldn't believe. Now, here's number two. You mentioned the whole ayahuasca experience. Now, I like this experience that I've repeated over and over. So, and sometimes I go out and take them and I'll have like a couple of beers, but I don't need anything else. Mm-hmm. So I find my alcohol consumption is way down, mm-hmm. way down. You might see me at Chiclets or something with the beer in my, but I think Biz brought it up and I can and Kenny's like, you were on the mushrooms, weren't you? Yeah. Because, but I do it. I often go out now and have like a pint or two, mm-hmm. take some mushrooms. I'm in a great mood, especially if it's a live band. I like watching live music. Mm-hmm. It's better. I'm not sloppy. I don't have a hangover. But here's what I'm afraid to make this leap. You brought up ayahuasca, and I'm guessing, I don't remember exact, but it left an impression on me. You know, doing the whole like going into the environment, like maybe a cabin in the woods, or in your case, I think you were saying you were really going into like jungle areas. Maybe I'm wrong. I think I remember that.
Yep.
And really going through the ayahuasca experience. Now, I'm afraid to do a hero dose of mushrooms. But if you're I guess, what can you tell me about that? Do I have reason to be afraid?
Well, I think the fear is normal. It's the fear of the unknown, right? It's a normal fear to have. I don't know anybody that's ever gone into these spaces that hasn't had some level of anxiety. It's kind of like playing a hockey game, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how it's going to play out, but it's an experience. And in these cases, like these larger dose mushroom journeys, or ayahuasca, or ibogaine, or 5-MeO DMT for that matter, you're going into essentially a dream state of some sort, right? And there, it's like it's uncharted territory. So naturally, that fear response would be there. But I could say from experience, my own personal experience in working with these medicines, is they're extremely safe. Even though the experience themselves can sometimes feel a little hairy, where you think that you might maybe dying, you might have some sort of ego death, where you're separating from your actual, what you would consider your identity, you know. So they say an ego dissolution. So all of a sudden, you talk about the spiritual element of life, like you really understand that we are spiritual beings living a physical existence. So there's a separation of who you think you are, and this intelligent, conscious energy system telling you, well, you're the source of you is love. It is pure divine love. And, you know, starting from that and then working outwards, because all the spiritual and religious texts talk about it. So I'm maybe rambling a little, going a little off here, but
no,
there really is nothing to fear. However, telling someone that is easier, you know, is easy, but it's just one of those things that on the other side of fear is so much space and so much clarity and compassion and all these, you know, these big words that, you know, are powerful and sacred. But I think what you're feeling is what most people feel. I will say that everyone that I've worked with these medicines has found a new perspective on the back end of it. We only see this world through this lens of our programming. It's the way we were brought up. It was the schools. Yeah. It was, you know, this program, or several layers of programming. And these medicines help strip away the programming, because the programs aren't real, right? It's what we how we interpret the world. So it's just breaks down these walls, and then all of a sudden you're able to see it with this very clear lens. With a lens of understanding and acceptance, because you realize that, you know, the yin and the yang, the good and the evil, like we all got both parts of it, right? The world is filled with both of it. And it's an acceptance for, you know, our past, and forgiveness. And then when there's acceptance, forgiveness, and compassion, there's space. I say the word space because I think that's the best word to describe it, of an ability to move forward without any friction, or with less friction and less resistance to the world. Because I said earlier, like, we become our own worst enemies, right? And it's like it's our thinking, it's our thoughts. And this is all going back to the spiritual teachings, whether it's Hinduism, Buddhism, shamanism. I mean, the core of it is even Jesus said in Christianity, it's, you know, we are essentially a byproduct of our thoughts, right? We are what we think. As you think, so you become. And then, you know, you look around you, and every knickknack or phones, like anything, everything starts with an idea, a thought. And that's in the physical world, but it also on the emotional and spiritual realm. Like, think about it. Like, you can think of like the best moment from last week, and, you know, from, you know, in your experience, the joy and the happiness in it. And you could also think of the worst day of your life, and how your emotional body responds. Like, you almost, your body gets like weakened. It gets like the vibration of it gets lower and lessened. So you're taking that and applying these lessons to the real world is like, we are an accumulation of thoughts. And I bring up the emotional piece because we are emotional beings. Like, traditionally we'd go off feeling, right? And we actually have more of a receptors in our heart than we do in our brain. So we'd feel before we'd think. We live in a culture now where it's all the mind, right? We distract the mind and we intellectualize everything, and we're trying to think our way out of this. But what I'm realizing is that, you know, between studying yoga and practicing yoga and teaching yoga, it's getting out of the mind and back into the spiritual heart. The spiritual medicines, sacred earth medicines like ayahuasca and psilocybin mushrooms, they're doing the exact same thing. They're helping you get out of the thinking mind and back into the spiritual heart, which is feeling. And we grew up in a culture that we don't talk about our emotions, right? In a culture, yeah. Not just at home, but in the locker room, you know, you never show weakness. You would never talk about your feelings. And that was just like suppress those emotions, those feelings. And now I'm like on the other side of the camp, like part of like how I've got to where I am today is being vulnerable and just like sharing my story and talking about my feelings and talking about like the struggles and all that good stuff, because what it's helping me do is just a little bit, is there therapy behind it, but it's once you're vulnerable, it almost allows people now feel like they're allowed or some version of that to be a little bit more emotionally intelligent or be vulnerable. But it really, the biggest part of these medicines is it helps you get back into feeling like going back to, you know, what's right or wrong, you know, it's like, but we've like abandoned this feeling and we just go like to the mind and let the mind start directing us. So a little bit of a tangent there, but it's kind of,
oh, no.
It's just bringing all these pieces back into alignment. Like we are what we think. And once we can start controlling our thinking, we can start controlling our self-talk. Like, how are we talking to ourselves? Like, is it the same way we talk to our children? Like, is there any compassion to ourselves? And then just continue to build outwards, because our emotional body is everything. If we can continue to have low vibrational thinking, low vibrational frequencies in our bodies, that just generally leads to disease and decay. We're going to get sick. Versus the opposite, we talked about this earlier, the positivity, high vibes, like all these, you know, the Rastafarians. I spent a lot of time down in Jamaica doing work and spending time with the indigenous Rastafarian people. Bob Marley was all about raising vibration through music, through positivity, right? I mean, he was a prophet. And he's not the only one that's ever been doing this. Jesus was a prophet. I mean, there are all these guys were saying the same thing. And it begins up here. It's affecting the spiritual heart, the emotional body, and therefore creating wellness. You know, wellness isn't just like working out and looking good in a shirt. You know, there's mental wellness, but you know, what transcends mental wellness is you know, the next piece of that is the emotional and spiritual wellness, because feeling is everything. I mean, life is supposed to be enjoyable. There's supposed to be happiness. You know, there's supposed to be play and creativity. And I see you doing it. You have fun. You play, you create. We are creators. You can't create when you're in a state of anxiety and depression.
Right.
You can only create. And then when you talk about the microdosing, it helps you come back to the present moment. That is the practice in the art of meditation, being meditative. It is being present in that moment, because the past is gone. And some would argue that tomorrow never, you know, the next moment never comes, because it only is the present moment. And that's where we create. We're co-creators with, you know, whatever term you want to call in this higher intelligent conscious energy. We are co-creators, and that is our job on this planet, is to create and be of service and raise vibration and consciousness. And these medicines help do that.
Now, that's incredibly well said, and I appreciate it, because I know you've been asked this 1,000 times, and it might sound repetitive to you. But each and every, if this helps one person, and I think it's going to help more than that, and inform loads, there's many layers to what you're saying, so I appreciate it. Now look, I'm astounded by it, and I'm curious, do you think that at there will be a point that this will be in National Hockey League dressing rooms as an option for people?
I mean, if you asked me about cannabis being in an NHL locker room, you know, 20 years ago, I would have said absolutely not. And you look at the amount of CBD products that are entering the locker room, whether they're,
only ask because I'm astounded. I would have said no fucking way in my lifetime. Sorry to cut you off, but that was my biggest thing. Now I'm thinking, and now that I know, Riley, sorry to cut you off, but now that I know, like if I had even known this when I was playing, then. Yeah. I definitely would have delved. I would have educated myself. I know I would have been a better prepared for the world and for all that anxiety that comes with, and all that energy—not always anxiety, but all that energy that's going on, like you said, finding yourself, it's hard to do when you're going through and everybody's telling you, right? And everybody wants something, everybody's telling you something, and everything you do is scrutinized on TV and everything else. It's hard to get there. So I think it would really help some people a lot. And so next, the separation of ego, I'm really fascinated by that. Mm-hmm. And I want to experience that, okay? Where, and what you're talking about is like heavy duty stuff that requires a lot of depth or a lot of explaining like you're doing. And you've, I think, articulated that better than anybody I know on the planet could articulate that back to me. And I think you're making people understand. So what would be the best route for people that are interested? Because it certainly wouldn't be go out, stand outside the bar, buy a bag of mushrooms and do them while you're sitting on the side of a, I don't know, mountain or wherever, even though it might seem like a good idea, but there is a safe, not that that's not, but there's a safer, there's a controlled way to do this, but where do they happen? Where does it exist? Where can people find help?
Yeah, you know, it's a challenging landscape, right? Because of just the legal implications, right? I mean, it's still, well, in the US Schedule One, I don't know what they call it in Canada, but you know, it's still illegal, right? So you have different countries. That's why we do a lot of our work in Jamaica. We're going to branch out into the British Virgin Islands because it's legal and unregulated. You got Oregon in the US now that has a legal program, Colorado rolling out a legal program. And this is more in the clinical setting. So it's not like cannabis where you can walk into a dispensary and buy a bag of mushrooms, at least not yet. Might get there. So it's more in this clinical settings through a psychotherapist. So I would say, you know, explore some legal avenues. And I understand, like, you know, the cost and the resources going into traveling to another country, another state, isn't in the cards for most people. But there is a lot of, you know, community work going on, if you will, like finding some elders or some leaders in the community that there's a lot of people working with these medicines. And I will say, however you engage with them, you know, I'm a huge, huge believer in going into this with the proper intention, the proper mindset. They say set and setting, which is essentially the mindset going into it. And then the setting you create for yourself, the environment. And you're talking about your experience with it, you know, with drinking, and, you know, you never did it for 15 years because you had a bad experience or whatever. I think a lot of people have had those experiences, including myself. And it's the environment that you've created for yourself. It's too much distractions. It's too much noise. It's too much negative energy stimuli. We need to be, you know, like the idea is to really approach this like meditation. You're sitting with yourself. You're essentially listening to the universe. Like you're sitting, you're just being the observer, and it's coming in. So when you can remove distractions, you can listen a lot more clearly, and you know, yes, right? Obviously, and so I would say, however this looks for you, is just finding trusted, safe, supporting people, and you know, and having a nicely curated environment where you can fully surrender and open your heart and just be, because it's hard for people to just be. Like, we're human beings, you know, we've become human doings, or we're like robots, right? I mean, so to just sit and be without having to worry about, you know, your buddy kicking down the door, you know, and whatever else, you know. So but I would, you know, I'm obviously an advocate for legal you know, psychedelic use, because I think it's the proper way, it's the safest way. I understand a lot of people are in jams and they want to explore, and you know, if they plan on doing that, find someone they trust to sit and hold space for them, you know. Yeah. So everything can be, you know, the best outcome possible. But it's a challenging, it's challenging because people need healing. Like, the world needs healing bad, and obviously the squeeze of legislation and the way the laws are certainly not helping, you know, humans, at least not enough right now. So
so there's actually, and I'm telling you, since I talked to you, I've done research. I mean, it affected me in a huge way. And I didn't realize there's a book, God, I should have been lazy. I don't want to waste your time now, but I think his name is Brian Marescu, or it sounds like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Immortality Key.
That's it.
Ryan Marquez.
And I couldn't believe in history, there's been so, like, I have a folklore degree, took a arts degree. So I took like 7 history courses. You know, I grew up Catholic, you know, knowing the Bible and all that. And I can't believe how much I didn't notice that he made obvious. He's like, this goes back way back. It's almost was a part of our existence in human consciousness since close to the beginning of what we know as human beings, and, you know, right back like thousands and 10,000s of years. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
and
it's crazy.
You know, a lot in hieroglyphics, and, you know, it turns up. It's just that people kind of choose to ignore it. So that, the Immortality Key, it's the exact book. I read that twice.
Pre-religion. I mean, you think about like the history of this stuff,
yes.
Right? I mean, it was almost like it was such a threat to the church. They had to create the church, you know? It's like, you know, I say spiritually booby-trapping because, you know, what I've learned is the system does a good job at separating man from God, right? It's like you got to, we can't connect directly to source. We got to go through man or machine or something, right? So, yeah, it's crazy, you know, like, yeah, the Kukion, I think it was the brew that he talks about in that.
He talks about it, yeah.
Essentially, I think it was alcohol-based. I think it was some, you know, version of beer or wine. The spirit, you know, spirit in it, they would infuse it with ergot, which was, a fungi that grows on wheat. Or grain, barley, and stuff like that. And then there was probably some other stuff mixed in there. So it was this concoction. They would drink it and, you know, raising consciousness, connecting to the divine, you know, without having to go into essentially a church or a temple, if you will, right? And the Native Americans knew. I mean, every culture on the planet knew this. I mean, you go down to you know, South America, and, you know, these indigenous people have been using ayahuasca forever, right? It's like, and then when you hear them talk about how they figure this out, they'll tell you the plants told them it's like this wicked looking ayahuasca vine and this other trichuna plant that has the DMT, and together, you know, one's DMT on its own, it wouldn't cross the blood brain barrier. You mix the ayahuasca vine with it, all of a sudden it's an MAO inhibitor, and it allows the DMT to cross the blood brain barrier, making it this like super profound visionary type of experience. Right. And then it goes on, you know, the psilocybin mushrooms grow, you know, they grow on every continent of the planet. I mean, the Siberian shamans were using them. So were the Mayans, and, you know, so were the Chinese, and like you go across the planet, everyone was using these, you know, colonialism. You separate, you know, you take away our history, you separate us from our roots. You know, and then you introduce a new program, you know, and that's the world we're living in. It's pills, right? It's just like, let's just flood the streets and flood these people with, I mean, highly expensive patented medicines, right? And we'll enslave them. I mean, you got synthetic heroin ripping through the streets, and right, and you got cannabis outlawed and psilocybin outlawed. It's like, do these guys have our back, really? Like, does the FDA, do these people really have our backs? Like, so then it's like, the question is like the spiritual quest is like, well, if it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem right, it's probably not right. Right. So is it really, are we going to continue to go down this path and just walk off a cliff and, you know, continue to poison ourselves? Or are we going to find a better way? And that's what we're seeing right now. I think people are realizing that the traditional system, the medical system, is heavily flawed in politics. Follow the money. You know, and then you see how much death and destruction has happened along the way. And then you see this movement, this renaissance around people that are finding nature again. They're reconnecting. You know, it's like reconnecting back to nature. It's highly intelligent, as are we. We've just forgotten. We've forgotten how to be. We've forgotten how to live. And I think these medicines help remind us how intelligent we really are, how conscious we really are. If we just listen, we just stop grinding ourselves into the grave and just sit now and then and just be, you know, enjoy life and create, you know, and just reminders. But we're in this like interesting cycle right now where the old system is falling apart and there's a new system being introduced, some version of it. There's some people call it the new earth. You know, people are starting to reconnect to their ancestral roots is what's happening, you know, and back to their self. It's ultimately comes back to self, right? It's like finding out who we are inside, you know, who we really are, you know, not who society thinks we are.
Well said. Now, speaking of intelligence, listen, man, did you take any schooling? You really articulate this stuff well. There couldn't be a better spokesman because you're really good at making it clear and understandable for people like myself. So do you have any schooling at all?
No. Grade 12. But, okay. But I will say, I mean, I have.
Not that you need it. I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I think maybe just from studying this, the spiritual nature of this work, studying it, like really studying the Yoga Sutras and Hinduism, Buddhism. So having like an understanding, and I grew up Christian, you know, so understanding it from like, you know, reading books, but also living it, like I live it, you know, I teach it. I mean, I practice meditation and yoga and breath work every day and I teach it, you know, and the, you know, the psychedelic experience have just helped me bring more awareness to these practices and help just, you know, I don't want to say accelerate the spiritual process because I'm not sure if you really can, because it does require a work, the actual work. But I think the mixture of studying it and experiencing it, I think maybe I can maybe communicate it a little bit more, because if you just read it in a book, you can't articulate it because you don't have the experience, you know. Yeah. If you just have the experience, you probably can still probably communicate it better if you just had the experience. But having read, you know, the literature and understanding it at least surface level and making sense of it as it pertains to my experiences, I could probably communicate it, you know, pretty well now. It took me a while, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. But and you're passionate about it. You can tell. I think, honestly, I really respect what you're doing. I think people should listen. And I appreciate your time. I just got a few layups for people. When I announced that you were coming on, they just wanted to know this is going to take 5 minutes at max. Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't have to elaborate. I'm curious on some of it too. And thanks again. Mm-hmm. So you came to St. John's Maple Leafs. Remember you said that, and I looked at the DB. So you played 6 games. You were right out of junior, but you had 5 penalty minutes. Who did you fight?
Oh, who was that fight? Jeez. How do I not remember this?
Well, you've been in a lot of them.
Yeah, I've been in a lot of them. I should remember that one. Could probably be my first fight. I know I got pumped. I'm trying to draw a blank. It wasn't Dougie Dell. Fuck, who was it?
Oh, I know Dougie.
let me think about that one.
Yeah, we can come back to it. I could probably find it on Hockey Fight.
You know who it was? It was it was a big, tough Carpentier. Remember that guy who played in the Montreal system? I think.
Totally know exactly.
Benjamin Carpentier, I think it was.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, he could throw.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, first pro fight losing to that guy isn't a big deal. You played in Memphis. Did you go to Graceland?
I did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How is it? I'm a big Elvis fan, and I've been to Tennessee, but haven't been to Memphis.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, again, I wasn't the biggest Elvis fan growing up, but obviously my parents were, and you know, he's bigger than life type of character. So cruising around his place there, and just like,
it's history.
Yeah, I mean, it's history, man. He's one of the, you know, obviously the biggest musicians of all time. So it was pretty neat.
Yeah, it's cool. Someone asked who you scored your first NHL goal. I know it was Carey Price, but I don't know how it happened. How did that? What kind of a goal was it?
It wasn't actually a bad goal. I mean, the timing, it was, you know, like 7-8 minutes left in the third period. I think we're down 5-1 at home in Philly. Actually, a pretty decent goal. Like went back, got the puck. I don't know why I was back first, but I broke the puck out to RJ Umberger, jumped up to the middle of the ice, he gave it back, and then I stepped over the line and shot it. It was a good shot over Carey Price's.
Legit, okay, didn't bounce off your foot and go in, you scored a goal on Carey Price.
Yeah, it was a legit goal, but it wasn't a meaningful goal. So I scored. I didn't even like celebrate. I just go line back up and lined up with Steve Beijing. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, you want to fight? And he's like,
oh, I remember him.
Yeah. What do you mean you want to fight? You just scored a goal. I was like, dude, I'm like, we're down 5-2. And that goal is meaningless to me. You know, it's like, that's not going to get me playing time next game. So
it's nice it happened the way it did. And this is it, man. I got one more question for you. I'm just curious myself. Do you wear over your Calder Cup ring? Calder Cup is one of these championships no one talks about, and I'm like, man, this is a hard thing to win, and it's still 4 rounds of playoffs with real rough and tough customers, hockey players that have always said, you know, the regular season to playoffs is a hard thing. The NHL's on spotlight. The minor leagues, you're doing the same thing. You're taking the same bumps and bruises. You've got a Calder fucking cup. Mm-hmm. What do you do with the ring?
Well, I still got it in my office. Yeah, man. Okay. It's meaningful. It was my first year in Philly, 2004-2005 lockout, you know, arguably, you know, at that time, the best league in the world. And I just got called out of the Central Hockey League for a 25-game PTO. I met the team in Hartford, like, game two of that year. And long and short of it, landed up signing four PTOs throughout that year and landed up winning the Calder Cup. Yeah, it was kind of like this interesting story.
The four PTO year.
Oh, yeah. They didn't even give me a contract. Oh, yeah. It's probably the first of its kind, honestly. They didn't want I didn't want to commit to signing, giving me, $40,000 or something? Like, what the hell, dude? Like, but yeah, it turned out to be an amazing year. You talk about, like, team chemistry. We got Carter Richards in playoffs there, Atlanta winning.
Remember that.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience. So,
listen, that's deadly, man. I couldn't have asked to end the week, this week of media blitz, any better than have you on the show and talk about something a little bit non-hockey that can educate people. Thank you. Do you have anything else to add before we go?
No, I appreciate you having me on and talking about this. I mean, as you know, like, the mental health crisis is real. I mean, really? Guys are going through it. And if they weren't going through it pre-COVID, I mean, it's exasperated. And I think, you know, the fact that you're talking about this and willing to talk about this, you have a big following. And, you know, if it just plants one or two seeds, you know, I think it's just something to put on your map and explore. You know, don't take my word for it. Do your research. Because there's something there that's beyond anything that the establishment has offered us. So we need to do better for our people, and we need to help everyone out. It's not just, this is beyond hockey. This is global, right? When we're suffering as a species. So if we can raise a little more conscious, bring a little more love and awareness into the world will be a better place. So appreciate the platform.
Well said, Riley Cote. Thanks very much. I appreciate it, my man. I love doing your podcast. The podcast is called the Nasty Knuckles Podcast. Check it out, folks. Consider it volume one of this conversation that we had. I talked a lot about myself, but of course, if you're into this podcast and you like this conversation, there's a similar one just around the corner, the Nasty Knuckles Podcast. Thank you very much, Riley. Hope to talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
Thank you. See you, my friend.
See ya.
Okay, folks, that was Riley Cote. Legend of Riley Cote continues to get bigger and bigger, and I love what he's doing. And, of course, most of his impact on us fans and the human race in general will be because of things that he's doing off the ice. I think he's an innovator, and I think there's a lot more where that came from. Okay, folks, if you're downtown St. John's, Newfoundland, and you want to have a beer, go to the Trinity Pub. Turkey Joe's, go to Rob Roy Confusion. Why not try Green Sleeves? My God, I'm drawing a blank. I do this every week. Go to Green Sleeves. Check out the Martini Bar. Check out the Bull and Barrel. Trinity Pub. Of course, if you're going to go for a bite to eat, start with the Loose Tie. Try out Merchant Tavern, Blue on Water, or Wedgwood Cafe. Those are my favorite places to go in town. Wedgwood Cafe, of course, is on Elizabeth Avenue. And Peter also does catering. Peter Wedgwood, Wedgwood Cafe. If you want to change your life, you want to work out, you want to work hard, or you just want to continue working hard and you want a different environment, look no further than Rope Walk Lane. Because you know what's on Rope Walk Lane? Power conditioning. Strength and balance for the body and mind. Check out Ryan Power at Power Conditioning. Of course, folks, Pitbull Pain Relief, the pain sticks that just don't quit. PitbullPainRelief.com. Check it out. See what all the fuss is about. And of course, True Hockey, take what's yours. I'll be back in just a few days, revamped, rested, and ready to spew more tales with Tierre. Folks, this has been one of the best weeks of my life, even though it's been tiring. And last Sunday was probably the best memory I have surrounding any sport that I've ever played. And I appreciate you all following along. And hopefully there's more stories in the tank yet. Not on the ice, of course, but maybe off the ice as far as acting, ball hockey, books, speeches, whatever it might be. I look forward to life after retirement now, as if I saw this coming for 20 years. In all seriousness, I got to retire on my own terms. And you know how I feel about that? Fucking awesome. Thanks for tuning in. Be back in just a few days with more Tales with TR. Catch you guys on the rebound.